Synthaholics, it's the Rad Tribal Podcast.
Welcome to Synthaholics. Thank you so much for downloading our show. I'm Aaron O'Brien, and today I have this wonderful guest I'm very pleased to introduce. Maybe some people outside of certain circles wouldn't know who he is, but people like myself know it's Lloyd Evans. He is the creator of a YouTube channel called John Cedars, and he is a very prolific man. He does, he's just released a book, The Reluctant Apostate, and he has also been on TV. He had on Leah Remedy's Scientology in the Aftermath. He did a special on Jehovah's Witnesses, and he is a very active person trying to unprogram people from the Jehovah's Witness cult. So, Lloyd. So, thank you so much for coming on my show and talking to me.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and live long and prosper to everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Lloyd just recently started up a channel outside his normal channel called Random Cedars, and this is you started doing some Star Wars. Content and just basically mostly for the rise of Skywalker.
And I
was thinking to myself, you know, this is a guy who would be great to hear what his ideas on Star Trek, because, you know, Star Wars is just pure adventure fun, but Star Trek asks a lot of deep questions about us.
It's a bit more intellectual, isn't it, Star Trek? And I have been asked which is my favorite, and my answer to that is, that's like asking me to choose between my two children. I don't have to have a favorite. I can enjoy both of them for their different attributes, you know. And as you say, I set up this channel because I wanted like an area of YouTube that could be just completely devoid of my day job of slamming cults, where I could just talk about almost anything other than that, which is why I called it Random Cedars. But it's been very unrandom so far, in that it's been mostly monopolized by Star Wars because of the rise of Skywalker. But I'm kind of hoping I can steer things kind of in more random directions moving forward. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously you started just a little before that movie was released, so you're just kind of caught in the vortex of all that. So,
indeed.
And I think from what I've watched on your channel, I think you and I are probably in the same camp with Rise of Skywalker. I enjoyed it. I thought some of the pacing was a little fast, but on this flip side, I was like, you know, this is Star Wars. We're not looking for, you know, a real laid out drama. It's just quick action.
What I got from it was just a quest, and I love films that are quests. I love Lord of the Rings. I love the Goonies. I love the Indiana Jones films, because they whisk you away on this adventure that has like a beginning, middle, and end, and where the stakes are high, and you have these characters that you're invested in. And that's what Rise of Skywalker delivers in a way that, for me, few Star Wars films do, because generally the story tends to be fairly complex, and you know, you find yourself dealing with very different parts of a film that are kind of glued together. But with this, they identify a problem, and a group of friends set out to solve it. So I enjoyed it for that reason, and for other reasons as well that I go into in some of my latest videos.
Yeah, definitely check those out. I mean, it gets a little bit of hate from some people,
and quite frankly, I think that, you know, with all due respect, I think that lots of Star Wars fans, they frankly are going to be annoyed at anything that isn't almost an exact replica of what their experience was when they were children. That's what it all boils down to. Yeah. And they can never have that back. I think at some point we need to stand aside and let a new generation enjoy it and let this thing be reinterpreted for new generations. And that's exactly what the new trilogy does. So I'm delighted with what limited fan service I received. And some would obviously argue that there's too much fan service, but I'm happy with all of that. And I'm also happy for these new characters and these new themes to be introduced. So I'm thrilled with the new trilogy.
I thought it was good. I had some issues with The Last Jedi. I thought there were
I did as well, yeah.
I thought there were some issues with the storytelling. Like, there were some dead ends that didn't really need to be there. But I recently rewatched it, and I came away with some different feelings towards, especially with Kylo Ren. I was always kind of like, ugh, Kylo Ren, he's such a like whiny little baby all the time. And I kind of got a different point of view at a certain point watching that movie. And I'm glad I rewatched. I watched it. I think I've watched Last Jedi maybe four times. And the last time I really came away with something stronger about it. So
I have my issues with Last Jedi, most notably the Canto Bight sequence, which I think is universally loathed as just completely deadening the film. Yeah. It almost has to restart after that. But the treatment of Kylo Ren's arc in The Last Jedi is, you could say, flawless and perfectly sets up what happens in Rise of Skywalker. In fact, what happens in Rise of Skywalker wouldn't make much sense if not for the way Rian Johnson treated Kylo Ren's character in Last Jedi. So you have to take the positives with the negatives, you know?
Agreed completely, yeah. But we didn't come on to talk about
Star Wars. No, we didn't.
We do talk about Star Wars there, but we are talking about Star Trek: The Last First Contact, not Last Contact. And Lloyd, you wanted to talk about this. First, just real brief question: what was your first introduction to the Star Trek franchise?
I guess as a teenager. There was a period on UK television. I mean, I am old enough to remember when television in the UK was four channels. and then it magically became five channels. And then I'm old enough to remember that. And on one of these channels, I think it was BBC Two, I would have been about, I'm going to say 13, 14 years old, they started playing the original series.
Okay.
And I used to watch it with my dad. And I just thoroughly enjoyed it. And I enjoyed the dilemmas that the characters used to have to deal with and these really kind of deep problems that they ended up having to solve. And they always did solve them, of course. Right. But I was captivated by it. And then I can remember The Next Generation starting, and I remember there being a bit of a debate with a lad at school who thought that the original series was crap, and The Next Generation was fantastic. And I firmly took the camp of Kirk and Spock against The Next Generation. But The Next Generation also did grow on me where I couldn't really decide which I preferred. But then, and we're fast forwarding now to maybe, I think it was 1998 when First Contact came out, and I would have been 18.
Okay.
And I remember going to see it at the cinema with my dad, because obviously, you know, we were fans together.
Yeah.
And we also took along a friend who had no experience with Star Trek up to that point. So basically, we were like a father-son team of nerds, and we were going with someone who wasn't a nerd.
Right.
And we were interested, obviously fascinated to see the film, but also interested to see whether our friend could enjoy it.
Sure.
And we came out, both of us obviously very much enjoying it because it's an amazing film. But our friend said, I loved it and now I like Star Trek. That was the impact that it had on him. So I've just got such fond memories. And in preparation for this show, I've watched the first half today, and I'm going to watch all of it with my wife after I finish this show because she hasn't seen it yet and she's wondering what all the fuss is about. So I want to kind of give her like a Star Trek 101.
Right.
Because she's again not a nerd at all, although she does enjoy the new Star Wars films with me. But I want to give her a Star Trek 101 because I have been I've obviously been watching Discovery and I've been enjoying that.
Awesome.
Whenever I've ventured onto the original series, because that's available on Netflix, Deanna will kind of wander into the room and say, "What on earth is this?"
I know.
Especially if it's one of those really embarrassing episodes where people are dancing around with lutes and all sorts of nonsense. So I don't think it's aged particularly well, to be honest.
It has. The stories hold up. That's the thing.
The stories hold up.
Not every story, of course.
Not every story. The characters are very well defined, and the characters stand the test of time, even if the way it's all put together, albeit in the 60s. And I was thinking about this the other day, because if you compare the origin of Star Trek with the origin of Star Wars, Star Trek began like a decade or so earlier, didn't it, in the 60s, when there was very little, you know, there was very little for them to go on in terms of budget, and they were really breaking ground for the first time in this whole genre. Whereas by 1977, obviously it would have been earlier than 77 when they started production, they had a few ideas to draw from. They obviously had a film budget, but also You look at how well that A New Hope was assembled, and I realize we're talking about Star Trek.
But Star Wars again.
they did such a perfect job on A New Hope that it does stand the test of time and it slots in perfectly. You don't have to go and remake it, do you? Because it's done so well.
Right.
I absolutely passionately love First Contacts, and I would actually say it's my favorite Star Trek film.
Yeah, I think this might be my second favorite. I think my first favorite I could watch on a desert island for the rest of my life is Wrath of Khan.
Wrath of Khan, yeah.
That what hit me at the right time in my life, and every time I watch it, I get more out of it because I get to a point where Kirk, it's a midlife crisis film for Kirk.
Oh yeah,
and being pretty close to midlife now, or actually I am midlife. Some things resonates within me because I'm like, you know, of past regrets. He meets an old girlfriend, they had a kid together, but he never met the kid. Unfinished business of things that he left with Khan, you know, and he's kind of wrestling with all these things that who he is and what he is. And he advanced to admiral and he hates his job.
Yeah.
You know, he would much rather go back to being captain, and he's not really, he's trying to reconcile all that. So I love that. But this movie, you know, Generations was trying to do the handoff between the old and the new.
It was a little bit.
It had nice parts, but
it was a little bit contrived, Generations, wasn't it? It was like, we want the best of both world situation, and what we're going to end up with is okay, but it's not as good as it could be if we weren't distracted by all of these boxes that we're trying to tick, you know.
Whereas
First Contact is, let's just focus on this crew, you know, the characters that are in this crew are good enough for us to build a story around them, and actually, boy, have we got a story, you know. I mean, the script, I was just watching it now and thinking, you know, this film is both a sequel and a prequel, if you think about it. Because at the time it was released, it was kind of progressing the Star Trek timeline at the time that it was released. And it's also a prequel because it takes you back to the very beginning of how Starfleet and the Federation or mankind's adventures in space first began. And it does it in a very thoughtful, intelligent way that suddenly adds depth to the whole Star Trek franchise. And it does it so cleverly that moment with Zefram Cochrane is then referenced in subsequent episodes of Star Trek. So,
I mean, I don't know if you know, but Zefram Cochrane showed up in the original series in the episode Metamorphosis.
Oh, right, yeah.
He doesn't look anything like him.
No.
He strangely shows up on this planet that he shouldn't even be on or even be alive at that point. But it's an interesting episode, to say the least.
Sure.
You were saying the story. Do you know that there was a lot of odd iterations of the story before it came out?
I didn't know that. No, please do educate me.
Some very interesting things. So apparently they got the green light to make this movie, and they were trying to figure out what they wanted. The one guy wanted to do a story about time travel, and the other one wanted to do just on the Borg. And like, well, what if we have them go back in time? They're going to marry these two ideas together. Go back in time to Roman time. And they were like, but they didn't want to put Picard in a toga. They thought they'd be strange, so they wanted to get...
Then it just becomes the original series, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Someone's got to end up in a toga for it to be Star Trek.
Another one was they wanted to put him back in the Italian Renaissance. And Data was going to be like an apprentice for Leonardo da Vinci. And the Borg were going to be like in some medieval like underground dungeon somewhere setting up their thing. And that didn't pan out either, but that was being tossed around for a while. And then there was another version of the current iteration we know now, and they wanted Zefram Cochrane to be seriously injured, and that they were Dr. Crusher is trying to get him back to health to do this flight, but Captain Picard has to organize the town to assemble the rocket, reassemble the rocket. Meanwhile, the whole time defending against these zombie Borg attacks on the planet. Mm. So like kind of out of the woods and, you know, in there. So, and Picard was supposed to fall in love with this like X-ray technician or something. I don't know, but so this whole thing was scrapped and they were like, it's a great idea, but
no, we'll have him fall in love in Insurrection instead. Yeah, go on.
Actually, Insurrection would be a fascinating movie to talk to you about because
I like Insurrection. I didn't like it the first time I saw it, but I've watched it since then and thought this is actually a really good film. I obviously don't like it as much as First Contact, but it's perfect Star Trek: The Next Generation. So if you view it with as like a bonus episode, it's fantastic.
Right. Right. Mm. And that's the thing is like, but it's funny because like, you know, being ex Jehovah's Witnesses, I see a whole like Paradise Earth and like the angels and demons wrestling over who's going to get control.
Surely there's no better analogy for ex Jehovah's Witnesses than the Borg. And that's when you were saying about how you relate to the Wrath of Khan. I too love the Wrath of Khan, but the Borg is just the perfect analogy for what it's like to be in a cult and to have to be robbed of the ability to think for yourself. So Picard's battle with this old foe that abused him is deeply symbolic of my own journey, which is why when I was watching it before, it sends a tingle down my spine because I'm thinking now I know why this film has always been my favorite, because there's so many breadcrumbs in there for the journey I've ended up going down myself, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. In addition to that, there's a lot of episodes peppered through all the different series out there that hit on some of those marks. It's very interesting. And every time I see one, I totally like, I get that one. I totally know what they're going for here. You know, like there's a Deep Space Nine episode called Paradise. And Sisko gets like, this lady's kind of like a cult like controller of this small colony. And it's fascinating to watch because how she's trying to control them and trying to break their spirits and stuff like that. So very interesting, but I agree. This one, the Borg, is an excellent symbology of making what it's like to be in a cult and to lose who you are, lose everything about you, and kind of just become a drone. You know?
And the way the script is written, you're always thinking in the back of your head, they're winning. I mean, they are just going right through the ship. They're progressing with their plan. Nothing is stopping them, and there's that agonizing moment where Lily confronts Picard and is trying to convince him to blow up the ship, and they obviously invoke what's the story, the whale story,
Moby Dick.
Yeah, there's just so many brilliant elements to it. Of we're going to bloody well defeat them, and we're going to do what it takes, even if it means blowing up the ship, of course. But no, I absolutely love all of the different elements of it. It's a thriller, and it's also how can I put it? I just love it. I can't really describe it.
Yeah, I agree. This is, to me, it's probably the second best film. I love Undiscovered Country too, but that's for different reasons. But I don't know if it hits all the spots.
Undiscovered Country, I remember going to see that at the cinema, and I even, did I get, I'm sure I got like a model. Like, you know the Airfix kits? I think I had a model. That's it. I had a model of the Enterprise A Undiscovered Country assembled. And yeah, it's a great film. I just think that Star Trek V, Voyage Home, in my view, is just an awful, awful film.
The one where they go back in time, or are you talking about where they meet God?
Where they meet God. It's terrible. It's undiluted awfulness.
Shatner directed that one.
And, yeah, he did. So we can blame it on him. We can kind of understand where this awfulness has come from. Yeah. And then Undiscovered Country, they kind of rescue it a little bit, mm-hmm. but you're still dealing with, I don't know. It's kind of what Star Wars would have been if Star Wars fans had insisted on the script for Force Awakens with only the original cast. You need some energy in there, and it's just lacking, with such an old cast, it's just lacking some energy in there with some youthful characters.
I do agree in some manner. I think what was nice about it, in Wrath of Khan and Undiscovered Country, there's twice in both movies, there's these dialogues between Kirk and Spock, alone in Spock's room. And each time, you can YouTube them. They're brilliant. The dialogue just by themselves. The one in Wrath of Khan is, Kirk taking command of the Enterprise because of the issue with Khan, and Spock's saying, "You should always do what you should be command of a starship. This is who you are. Don't do anything else." And the other one, in Undiscovered Country, the discussion is basically, Spock thinking he had all the answers and he was wrong. And, Kirk's kind of talking about who they are as people. And it's an excellent discussion between the two. And it's like, what a great two characters to bounce off each other. You got Kirk, this kind of like guy who just man of action, just always doing. And then Spock, introspective, always analytical. It's just wonderful.
Isn't it interesting though how with the Kirk Spock dynamic, you have the captain and the first officer, and in the Next Generation, there isn't really a clearly defined relationship, because there are multiple characters who are kind of integral. So there's the Picard Riker relationship, but in First Contact, it's really more about Picard and Data, And Data in the film is funny. Literally, as I was coming down to record this and we were talking about First Contact, Deanna was saying something along the lines of, "Is Data in it? I love Data." And I said, "Data's actually a superhero in this." And he is, if you think about it. He's almost like a Marvel character.
Yeah.
Because of the things he's able to do. And the
way
they...
Blacks out the computer in seconds.
Yeah, and when they're at the missile facility, he does this impossible leap down, and then he's shot at and, pretends it's not happened, and Lily faints.
Yeah,
and just all of that stuff as well. I mean, and you're watching it thinking, why didn't we see this Data in the Next Generation? Obviously, because they didn't have a movie budget, but...
Right.
I love the fact that they explore that aspect of Data, because of course he'd be able to do all of those things, there's so many things I like about it, and you mentioned some of the genesis of the script, but it's clear that whatever the process was, a lot of thought went into it. Yeah. So that when you end up with the script, you have, as far as I'm concerned, is the perfect science fiction film, because I can't really poke any holes in the plot. I mean, obviously, it's always a bit messy when you have time travel. Sure. But the plot makes sense. The dialogue is on point, and there's even bits of humor in there.
Right.
Like, for example, when Picard intercepts Lily, and Lily has him at phaser point, mm-hmm. and Picard finally sweet talks her into giving him the phaser, mm-hmm. and he says, "This was on maximum setting. If you'd have fired it, you would have vaporized me." And she says, "It was my first ray gun." You know,
just
things like that. And the scene in sick bay, of course, when the Borg are about to bust in, and Dr. Crusher is like, "I swore I'd never use one of these," and up pops the emergency medical holographic program, and that's a cute scene as well. There's this right. perfect balance of genuine urgency and genuine peril laced with moments of comic relief.
I'm a doctor, not a doorstop.
Exactly. Yeah. So, as far as I'm concerned, it's kind of the perfect science fiction film, and there isn't a single part of it where, in retrospect, I'd go back and change. I mean, with A Voyage Home, I'd sit down with William Shatner and say, "Do not make this film."
Right.
Hand over the project to someone completely different and start from scratch. You know.
But, yeah, because I think Star Trek III, they gave Nimoy. To the Search for Spock, when Spock yeah. came back, like, they gave him directing reins on that, and so I think Shatner was like, "Well, if Nimoy, why can't I?" You know,
anything Nimoy can do, I can do better.
Yeah,
Bill.
Shatner's a bit of an egotist. You know, I'm a lover of Shatner, but you know, he's obviously very full of himself, and
Course, First Contact, directed by Jonathan Frakes, and you can actually see some quite clever cinematography, which you also see in the episodes of Discovery, because Jonathan yeah. Frakes directs some of the Discovery episodes. So there's a genuine talent there that has stood the test of time, rather than it purely being a vanity project.
And you know? Everyone who says they've worked with him, they say he's a pure joy to work with. He's yeah. He brings a lot of energy to the set. And he understands the universe of Star Trek. So if something didn't feel right, or something seemed out of place in like in the script or even in the set, he would probably make those adjustments. And that's what I like about Jonathan Frakes. He seems genuinely like he loves the franchise. He's not afraid to embrace that fandom or the world.
And he's not made his character central. I mean, Riker is almost an afterthought in First Contact. He's yeah. just stuck down on the planet keeping things going right. while the real action's happening on the Enterprise. And that, again, speaks volumes of the humility of the man, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely things that people have said in the original series where Shatner would come in and talk to the director and say, "I want you to just put the camera straight on my face on the scene."
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
So yeah, I mean, ego is a huge thing, and you know, these are actors. Obviously, if you're driven yes. into Hollywood and to yeah. act that level, yeah. you have your wiring's a little different than most.
And so, I think there is a secret Shatner in somewhere in Frakes, because he obviously did that. Have you seen the clips of him doing that god awful thing where he says, "Did it happen? Is it real?" You know, have you seen? I don't even know what the series is called. That's how awful it was.
Yeah,
but
no, yeah.
Someone did like a montage of it all together, and you're yeah. thinking, this is pure Shatner. Shatner would have done this sort of thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, remember Nimoy did the what is it? I'm losing the name right now. He did like that TV show about like weird things, like, you know,
Nimoy did Bilbo Baggins' End of Story. You know, yeah. "I rest my case, Your Honor." No,
there's nothing.
Let's
Nimoy
be honest here. You know,
it's a thing about like some of those cast members. They wouldn't say no to things.
Yeah.
You know, they would definitely say yes to a lot of things. And
they didn't have good agents, did they? Let's be honest.
That's true. But it did lead to some cool things too. So, yeah. I mean, there's no getting around that. So just real quick, I usually do a quick just rundown of the story. And if there's anything you want to bring out that you liked or hated or thought could have, we do with the plot real quick.
Okay.
The one thing about this is this movie is it's a little graphic for Star Trek. Don't you agree? Like, younger kids would probably be kind of terrified of this movie.
Oh, it's definitely not for kids. No, like I say, it's a thriller. I mean, you're terrified of the Borg, and rightly so, and that's what keeps you riveted, because you genuinely feel as though the Borg are winning. Right from the get-go, when the engineering officers start getting picked off, you realize that the stakes here are pretty high, and probably lots of crew members are going to get assimilated, which is what happens. But the ingenuity and you know, character of Picard wins through eventually, which is what Star Trek's about. You know, just, you know, this impossible problem where the stakes are high, and using basic ingenuity and intelligence to find a way through the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the story starts off with Jean-Luc waking up from basically reliving his Borg experience. And he has like a inception moment, a dream within a dream, where he thinks he's fine, and then it starts crawling out of his skin even more. And we get
how
to
many
the point...
science fiction films can we reference in this episode?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, bursting out of his face. There's like, I mean, and then we get a call from Starfleet saying that there's a problem. The Borg is coming towards Earth, but unfortunately, they don't think Picard's up for the task for helping with the Borg threat, and they assign the Enterprise to the neutral zone just to watch the Romulans, just in case they decide to get a little sneaky during this invasion. When they are out there, bored out of their minds, they get kind of like the radio show of what's happening with the Borg when they engage the Borg, the Federation's engage the Borg, and they
getting
decide-
pasted. They're getting totally pasted. And it's actually, we better go and help them.
Then Picard's like, yeah, I'm going to go in direct violation of orders. And nobody seems to have any qualms with that. So,
In fact, Data says, I think I speak for the whole crew in saying, to hell with our orders.
That's right. Absolutely. Data, with his emotion ship, is after generations seem to get far more interesting.
Yeah.
For just funny takes. So they engage the Borg, and obviously Picard has some odd knowledge, and also he can seem to like hear some of their transmissions once in a while. So there's something that he's
it's almost like a psychic link that he has.
Yeah, he's like a little telepathic with them. And so he directs the fleet. I guess the admiral gets killed, so he takes command of this fleet, and they order him to. He orders the fleet to fire at these certain spots in the Borg cube, and which seem to have no use whatsoever. And this does the trick, blows up the Borg cube. But the Borg sends out like a small probe out, and it starts opening a temporal vortex, and it opens up this time hole. And they watch as Earth is completely transformed into a Borg world, right in front of their eyes. And because they're in this temporal vortex backwash or something of this, they haven't been affected by it. So, Captain Picard decides, I'm going in, and we're going to undo the damage that they've done. So they get they go back to the year 2063. So not too long. I mean, I think we'll be pretty old men, if not close to dead by that point. So.
Although it's worth noting that there's supposed to be a third world war in the mid 21st century, so that's something to look forward to. I think we've had omens of it already this year.
I think we're very close to
it.
scaring the hell out of me.
So we
go back to 2063. This is after World War III, and this is just by the time when Zefram Cochrane is a mad scientist inventor who has taken an old missile silo and a missile and turned it into a rocket that could go to warp speed.
It's a warp vessel.
Yeah. And
so it's the first warp vessel. Yeah. Because so far alien races have been ignoring Earth because it's not advanced enough. So if alien races can pick up the very first ever warp signature, then they will start engaging with humans and you will have what's called first contact, hence the name of the film.
Yes, exactly. And this is where they decide to, the Borg decide they're going to try to prevent that first contact. And when basically within minutes they figure out what's happening, they destroy the Borg cube. But what they don't realize right after they blow it up, that they must have beamed over onto the Enterprise. It's not said at that moment, but later on, it's pretty much you surmise that later on. Picard
39.1 degrees.
Yeah.
The Enterprise, the temperature on the Enterprise slowly reaches the optimum Borg temperature.
They like it just right.
They do.
They're like an old person. Ah, it's too high. It's too low.
Yeah, and there's a faint smell of rotten vegetable as well. They're basically old people, old cybernetic old people from the future.
Clean up these newspapers. Good. So Picard and crew go down.
They kind of move at the pace of an old person as well, don't they?
One thing I never got about the Borg, a little faster. Yeah. I mean, I know it's kind of like, I don't know if you're a Doctor Who fan, but like the same thing, like everyone moves so stinking slow. And you're like, how is it leaving? I don't know. But
anyway.
So they go down to the planet. And they are trying to assess the damage. They can't find Zephyr Cochran, but they do find Lily, like his right-hand woman, trying to help him assemble this rocket. She, as you said, has this great scene where she's shooting a machine gun at Data, does nothing to him, and she gets radiation sickness. And so Dr. Crusher decides she's going to take her up and get her patched up before bringing her back. During that time, they decide they have to rebuild this rocket because it got somewhat damaged during the Borg attack. And so that's their plan right there. But at the same time, Picard up on the ship, there's taking over the decks on the,
quite a clever exchange of personnel because Picard realizes that they need Geordi LaForge and the engineering team to beam down to fix Zephyrin Cochrane's ship. And almost immediately afterwards, he starts figuring out that something's wrong on the Enterprise, and when he finds out that the temperature's starting to fluctuate, he takes his cue and returns to the Enterprise with Data. So there's this key exchange of personnel that sets up the events for the rest of the film.
Yeah, and so Picard and Data go up to the ship. Riker, Troy, and LaForge stay down with a bunch of crew to help repair. In the meantime, Deanna does find Zephyr Cochrane in the bar. We have a great scene where she's gets drunk on tequila with him, and he's
you're blended all right.
Yeah, it's
I
great.
Was trying to blend in.
Yeah, it's a great scene, and in fact, I think Jonathan Frank just says that's one of his favorite scenes in the whole.
Yeah.
So during this time, this is when Picard and crew decides to try to take out the Borg and figure out what's happening. And Dr. Crusher has to escape sick bay by going through some of the small Jeffries tubes. And they take Lily with her, but Lily splits off. She doesn't know who these people are. She had just woken up. She doesn't even know she's on a ship yet. So she's just trying to get away. She thinks she's probably in some like other military complex at that point. And Data gets unfortunately captured in this fight, and we don't know what's going to happen to him. And they have to then go from trying to figure out what they're going to do with the ship and try to stop the Borg. And their weapons are limited, as usual. I think in the beginning they only had like 12 shots, and by the time they're trying to defend themselves against the when they're trying to dismantle their deflector dish radio station they're building, they end up only getting like 3 shots or less, I think. So they're only limited for so much. Data's we get introduced to the Borg Queen, and this is the first time we see the Borg Queen. We see the Borg Queen later on in Voyager episodes, so obviously there's different iterations of the Borg Queen or something. I don't know. And but
this was quite a revelation at the time, because you know, Next Generation fans going to watch First Contact only knew of the Borg as being a true collective where the power was kind of shared between all of the drones. And then you find when you go to First Contact, much like the dynamic within cults where everyone's told, oh, we're all equal, there is actually someone at the top. It's like Orwell's Animal Farm. Everyone's equal, but some are more equal than others. So
nice, exactly.
So you have this Borg queen who's been pulling the strings all along.
How did you feel about that when you saw that?
It made total sense. Yeah.
To me, at first, I was kind of put off with it. I was sort of just like, oh man, it kind of like weird that they kind of modeled it after like maybe an ant or a bee colony.
But you have instant hypocrisy because she's trying to convince all her drones, or has convinced all her drones, that everyone's, you know, everyone's on the same footing, when quite clearly she's deriving some benefit from the position she's in. So
she even says to Picard later, you can't imagine the life you denied to yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
So obviously there is a different tier of power.
Of Borgdom. Yeah.
Borgdom. So as they're trying to do that, there Picard runs into Lily, and there is some great scenes between Lily. I actually last time we spoke about this, one of my the hosts at Dave, he said he wasn't a fan of Lily. I actually love Lily in the
Lily
movie.
Was brilliant. Yeah, and Lily was basically how she acted exactly how you would imagine most people to act if they were thrust into that situation from, you know, well, from a 21st century setting, which we now find ourselves in because we're all in the 21st century. But yeah, she her reactions to everything are basically very relatable, and she's also able to come at this with a whole fresh perspective without having any kind of ingrained veneration for Picard, which allows her to unload some truth bombs on him probably the crew wouldn't have been able to. So, again, the script anticipates all of these things brilliantly.
Yeah, she said that outsider, and it's great because in, like, your friend, when you went to go see the movie way back in the day, they didn't connect with Lily right away, but she's asking all the questions and she's getting all the information that they would need to kind of fill in the blanks, you know,
exactly.
Like how, so that's what's great. And that in the very beginning where we see Picard was assimilated and he wakes up from the dream, that's a perfect way just to kind of like, this is what happened to Picard. This is why he's a little bit like in tune with the Borg, but also got like this, you know,
cut
Captain
him some slack because he's been through a lot. Yeah.
This Captain Ahab character a little bit too. Yeah. So he's a little bit of both. So, So at a certain time, like you said, when Lily comes onto the scene with Picard, they have this altercation, and there's a great altercation between Worf and Picard because they can't do anything more. The Borgs are just cutting through their people, and you know Picard's becoming a little bit fanatical, saying, you know, fight them hand to hand if you have to, and stand your ground. And Worf's like, just blow up the ship. Like it's the Enterprise is lost. There's nothing else we can do, and calls him a coward. And I love that scene between the two because he goes, "If you were any other man, I'd kill you where you stand." So,
yeah,
probably one of his best lines ever.
Yeah, and I love the fact that that the Klingon theme is referenced.
Yeah.
By the way, the music is so well put together. I love the fact that First Contact has its own theme, which we haven't seen in any other film. I'd actually love it if they used the First Contact theme for the new Picard series, but who knows what they're going to do with that. But I love the First Contact theme, and I love the fact that at various points they insert the Klingon kind of theme tune from the original series films when Worf's around, and it's just a lovely throwback to the original films, you know. Yeah,
I love it too. There's very few Star Trek movies I do not like the music for. The one where they go back in time with the whales, it's Star Trek IV. Yeah. There's some beautiful music in there. There's a bell thing, like dun 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 dun. It's this beautiful sound. It sounds wonderful. So, they have some great.
That's really more of a Star Trek comedy film, isn't it? I think
it is. I showed it to my kids, and they laughed their butts off. Yeah. I have a good laugh at that. So, yeah. And then unfortunately, I put on, you know, it's funny with my kids. I put on Star Trek, and they go, "Oh, Dad, not Star Trek again." And then they're totally into it within like 10 minutes. They're asking questions. So,
yeah, it's in the DNA. Yeah.
Yes, it is, isn't it? So Data at this time is being kind of converted to, like, getting flesh grafted on, and the Borg Queen is seducing him with the pleasures of the flesh, and
because Data's whole journey so far is to become more human, and the Borg Queen promises that she will complete this quest.
Yeah, and she's kind of like saying, like, why even do that? Just join our team, and you're going to do something even crazier. Mm. So when Picard decides that he's going to agrees with the Lily and it's going to destroy the ship, he set the destruct sequence, but he says, I got to go try to save Data. He goes in to take in to rescue Data. And this is where, you know, we realize that it seems like Data has turned against Picard. Mm. But to the last minute, he decides he's not, because when Zefram Cochrane's ship takes off and he's going to warp speed at the proper time so the Vulcans see him, his warp signature, he misses. And this is when they spring into action, and Picard pulls out the plan that he was originally going to do. He's going to release this toxic gas part of the engine that would destroy organic material and kills the Borg Queen, and even Data's skin that was grafted on has been disintegrated. Mm. Thankfully, Picard stays above that gas, and he wins the day, and we get the great scene where he breaks the neck of the Borg Queen at the very end. Mm. So,
unfinished business.
Yes, exactly. There you go. Yeah. And back on the planet, we get the Vulcan ship lands, and they make first contact with Zefram Cochrane, and then Picard and crew say goodbye to Lily and beam off, and they head back to their 24th century. That wraps up the movie. I love everything about this movie. I think you're right. The script is tight. There's nothing. The only thing I could possibly give it, because this is Jonathan Frank's first directing, big movie. Sometimes there's some weird, I don't know how to put it. It's like pacing, or the scenes don't seem, either they seem too big or too tight. I can't quite put my finger on it. I'm sure if you watch it a couple times, you if you keep that in mind, you might see it's nothing, like, it's not glaring. It's not like a huge issue. It's just a thing that I noticed that compared to other directors. Mm. And maybe things have changed too since then. So
it's definitely a film of its time. And if they'd had the same script today and they were making it, it would look and feel completely different. But it kind of, the fact that it's of its time and it's a little rough around the edges in parts, it makes it even more endearing to me, because despite it being like a rookie director, for me, it's the perfect science fiction film. It has everything you'd want in a Star Trek film, and it puts these characters that you've spent, you know, multiple seasons of TNG getting attached to, it just puts them in this perfect situation where you're completely gripped and want to know how it all pans out.
I loved it, and it's a great movie. It is a great, especially a great introduction movie, because you don't really need to go see all the other TV shows before that. I mean, you can watch them and kind of get the backstories if you want, but it's not necessary.
If you've never seen Star Trek, start with First Contact, and that gives you the beginning and, you know, a good chunk of the way through, and then you can just fill in the in-between bits.
Right. Yeah, I would say either this one. Did you like the JJ reboots at all?
I did to begin with, but I've not watched them for ages, and I think that's because it's dawned on me that what he's done is completely made irrelevant all of the original timeline, which I don't particularly appreciate. So I think, look, I probably will watch them again at some point and just try to enjoy them on their own terms. But I'm very much of the original timeline and don't buy into the Kelvin timeline, whatever it is.
I enjoyed
Abrams
the first
timeline. Sorry, Abrams, I'm sorry. Of the Kelvin. Is it Kelvin timeline?
It's Kelvin.
Is the yeah. So his is the Abrams timeline. I'm not an aficionado. I'm not appreciative of the Abrams timeline.
Yeah, I liked the first reboot. I'm not a huge fan of it. I really loved aspects of Into Darkness, the second film, but I didn't like what they did with the Khan character. I thought it was just kind of stupid.
Yeah, it was almost like we want to give a role to Benedict Cumberbatch, you know, and even if he's completely unsuited to the role that's been defined. I actually think I preferred Beyond to...
Yes, Beyond was a really fun film. It really was. Yeah. It's not perfect. It's got issues.
I like the fact that it interweaves... what was the first with Archer? Enterprise. Interweaves Enterprise a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I appreciate it.
Was it an NX class ship?
Exactly.
So
yeah, yeah.
Lloyd, I know we're getting kind of close to our end time here. I wanted to ask you a couple real quick questions, kind of nerd questions, but they could be any questions. So I wanted to throw out, you don't have to give it a lot of thought. But I got 10 questions I want to just throw at you since first one, Kirk or Picard?
Gosh.
Ah.
That is a hard one.
Come on. It should be easy. I know you love both.
I'm very, very fond of Kirk, but I think I'm going to have to go with Picard. I wouldn't be as excited about a new Kirk season as I am about a Picard season, so I think that says it all.
Second question, what is your favorite version of the Enterprise?
The one I have on my desk, which is NCC-1701, but the rebuild from the Wrath of Khan, which is what we were talking about earlier. So
that's my favorite.
That's the most iconic Enterprise as far as I'm concerned.
That's my favorite as well. If you were given option for time travel, you can't change anything in the past. You can just observe. What point of time would you like to go back and see?
Just observe.
Just observe. You can't change anything. You're there. Bring a video camera if you want, or take your phone.
That's a good one. I'd have to give it some very careful thought, and it would probably have to be an undisputed point in Middle Eastern history where I can document the fact that something that is said to have happened in the Bible didn't actually happen and it was all made up. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I'd have to consult with some archaeologists in advance to figure out what year that would be. Yeah.
Right. what is a scene in a movie that you, every time you see it, gives you goosebumps? Every time you watch it, you love it.
Ah, that's an easy one. Force Awakens. The garbage will do. Seriously, just thinking about it sends a shiver down my spine. Because that was, come on, Lloyd, we're going to go back to your childhood. That's what that scene said. Yeah. It's like, yes, take me to the Millennium Falcon. That's a much, much better ship. You know?
It's a better ship.
Yeah. Just saying the words, the garbage will do, sends a shiver down my spine. So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. What is one of your guilty pleasures?
One of my guilty pleasures?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. Just something stupid that you like that nobody else probably likes.
That's a good question. I can kind of make a very strong case for almost everything in my life. Okay, here's one. We recently bought Nerf guns.
Ah.
And as you all know, any kind of simulation of violence is strictly forbidden in Jehovah's Witness families. But we're having great fun with our 5-year-old daughter having Nerf battles. At the moment, my daughter likes being on Daddy's team. But in our last battle, there was a brief moment where she was saying, "Mummy, can I come on your team because you're winning?"
You're like, "Traitor!"
Yeah, there was some tough, some hard conversations that needed to be had at that moment, but thankfully she stuck with me, so and we prevailed.
See, my issue now, it's always getting hit in the nuts with it, so it's like, it's not fun.
It really depends on the gun, to be honest. If it's a handgun, it can't really do much to your vital parts, but if it's one of the powered guns, yeah, you're going to feel it.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a direct hit on one of the two beds, it's gonna sting.
Right. What extinct species would you bring back if you had, or if you could, and why?
A close human relation. So probably like a Neanderthal or maybe a Homo erectus or something like that, so people could understand more about human evolution, because at the moment so many people deny it.
Yeah. No, that'd be cool to see that for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. What's the scariest movie you've ever seen?
Oh, I hate scary movies. I really hate them.
Yeah, but you've got to see one that was pretty scary.
Well, the whole reason why I don't have a great deal of draw from is because I hate them. That's the problem. What's one where people are, I hate movies where people are just doing hideous things to each other.
Yeah, like torture and stuff like that.
Yeah, I can't handle it. Oh, I'd have to really think about it.
Well, you could get, if you think of it, let me know. Yeah. What song would be looped in hell?
What song would be looped in hell?
Like you just play over and over again.
Most Bosnian music. If you've ever listened to Bosnian folk music, it sounds like it's like a soundtrack of madness. It's like I can't even. It's like some kind of high pitched organ sound, and
it's really, like, really hard. Why did you create this music?
Well, I mean, you could kind of understand them doing like 10 seconds of it as a joke, but it obviously goes on for hours potentially. So, if I was stuck in any kind of close proximity to that kind of music, I would actually be in hell, I think.
That's hilarious. I'll have to look that up on YouTube or something.
Yeah. Don't. Trust me, you don't want to do that. Yeah.
Let's see. What do I got here? What do you wish that somebody taught you a long time ago?
What do I wish that someone... I wish someone had taught me a long time ago?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to sound super conceited and super arrogant, but I'm really happy with what I've learned and the stages at which I've learned it, because an obvious thing that many ex-witnesses would say is, oh, I wish someone had taught me that I was being lied to when I was a witness and I could have broken out sooner and, enjoyed thinking for myself. And I fully relate to that and understand why people feel that way. It's just in my own personal journey, my life had to unfold in the precise way that it did, or I wouldn't have my wife, I wouldn't have my daughter, and I wouldn't be doing the work I'm doing. So,
yeah, that's a great way to look at it. I'm sure we have very similar stories that in some ways overlap, but I wouldn't have met my wife. I wouldn't have even the friends I have now. I have a lot of ex-witness friends that, we all exited at different times, but, we've reconnected and, I wouldn't have had those memories too, together, and for good or ill, we had each other. So,
yeah.
So there's some benefits even from the bad. And you can't extract the bad out of the, without.
We are who we are because of everything that's happened to us, not just the good, but arguably mostly the bad. It's those bad moments that have kind of forged us into who we are. So no, I'll take all of it, thank you, including the ignorance that I struggled with. Yeah,
as Kirk says in your favorite movie, I need my pain.
The Final Frontier.
Yeah, The Final Frontier.
Was I calling it the wrong film earlier? I meant The Final Frontier.
I know which movie you're talking.
The Final Frontier. Good grief. It's just... I can remember watching it when I was a teenager and thinking, oh, this is a fun film. But then I revisited it as an adult and thought, what on earth is this? How can you take something as pure as Star Trek with these amazing characters and make it crap? But complete Shatner terrible. Managed to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. He did a good job. Yeah. Last question. What work of art really made a lasting impression on you? And when I mean art, it could be film, it could be music, it could be visual.
That's a really tough one. What work of art made a lasting impression on me?
It could be film, too, if there's something that you really...
I'm going to have to go with A New Hope, I think. Because A New Hope is one of the earliest films I saw, and it opened my mind to new possibilities, and it was... I experienced Star Wars before I really got to understand and appreciate Star Trek. So it was those early encounters with this whole other universe that kind of helped me to understand that there was more to our imagination than just this very totalistic authoritarian regime that I was being raised in. And, it was like a little beam of light shining through a distant window. So that's why I surround myself with reminders to both Star Trek and Star Wars, because that's basically the purity in from my past that I can hold on to. Everything else can be mostly discarded.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Mm. I don't think people later generations understand the sea change of what New Hope did to a whole generation. Nobody can quite understand, because you know, at the time, like you said, there was like, you know, what, 3-4 channels. Going to a movie was something you did like every maybe 2 or 3 months at most, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, seeing that movie completely changed everything. Mm-hmm. So it was a generational thing for sure. And then now we have such a glut of it. You don't even know which one. Like, I don't know.
Young people today, they don't know they're born, do they? Yeah. I don't know.
But, you know,
the young generation, they're ruining everything.
I don't think they're ruining, but they have way more choices than we ever had. That's for
they
sure.
They don't know they're born, do they?
Yeah, that's true. And I kind of, it's strange. I have the same thing. I have different things that kind of anchor me from where I was. Obviously, Star Wars, Star Trek is one of those as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's fascinating, though. You look back at it, and there's still things that you. You look back and you still feel like that kid when you first saw it first time. I'm the same way when I see the original Christopher Reeves Superman movie.
Oh yeah, they were good.
Yeah, the first one's pretty good. They kind of trail off later on, but
I would imagine not all of them have aged particularly well. No, but I can remember thoroughly enjoying them when I saw them. Yeah,
yeah. So when I see them, I remember being that young and just the hope that maybe I could be something as good as Superman, you know, maybe not fly, but, you know, be that kind of upstanding person, you know, that's what I would hope for. So, sure. So that's, I'm so happy that you could come on and talk, this movie with me and you know, give your thoughts to it too, because, you know, I don't often, you know, I don't know what this is, episode 246 or 8 or I don't know what it is, but we're up there and I don't get to talk to ex-witnesses. So, and someone like yourself who is very much active in trying to get people to realize what's happening with them, it's so I don't often get to talk to somebody with the same lens that maybe I have. And it's interesting. I find that, I don't know if you feel, I think you, from the YouTube videos, I think you're kind of the same way. You look at everything now with a very analytical eye, and you don't just accept everything that's presented to you.
No.
Try to think it through, you try to get all the information, and then make your decision later on.
Which you could argue stems in some way from Star Trek, because that's how they solve their problems. They get all the relevant information. They consult the science officer and they take measurements and
how often do they come to the wrong conclusion, and then by the end they figure out what they did wrong
exactly in
correct course kind of thing. So that's where I think we're all like that. We've left the religion and we realize I had the wrong idea here and I gotta change my life and move things around. So,
exactly.
Yeah. So it's an extreme pleasure, and I give you so much credit for helping out. You know, people like me. No, we're not alone in the world. And I know you give a lot of help to a lot of people who are trying to find their way, who are in the middle of it too, just trying to realize that, you know, what is this right? You know, am I in the right, you know, do I need to rethink things? So that's a difficult time to be in, you know, because if you're going to leave that world, it's scary because you are leaving not just a religion, you might be leaving your family, friends that you've known for years. So there's a big change. And I would really suggest if anybody has any of those, I mean, don't even have to be a witness, but in that world, you know, definitely go to his John Cedars channel and check that out. You know, you've got a lot of information there for people to draw on.
Well, I have the benefit of a very good team around me. I've got a very understanding wife. We have a WhatsApp group where I communicate with other JW Survey team members, and it helps us kind of process things. So we have our little community, and we have each other's back, and that certainly just takes the edge off how emotionally draining, you know, the whole thing can be. And I also have the support of hundreds of patrons who help me do my work, and I feel incredibly fortunate to be able to do what I'm doing as my full-time job. So, look, it can be draining at times, but it's also immensely rewarding, fulfilling work, and I'm determined to beat the Borg.
Yeah, I give you a lot of credit because I there's times I feel like I want to go, you know, rage against the machine myself, but it's hard to keep up that pace constantly. There's a lot of emotion there. There's a lot of
isn't there that point in the film where Picard says, "We draw the line here."
Yeah,
he gets really relate to that.
You get that, and it's funny because I watched this movie a couple days ago, and I was thinking about just our discussion that we're going to have, and I was like, I can see where Lloyd's coming from. Mm-hmm. I can see some of the reasons. Like, I could see your you identifying more with this Picard character at this moment, you know, and I get that. So, why don't you give them just a quick information where to contact you and where to look for you.
Contacting me, I wish I was easier to contact, but unfortunately I'm dealing with a cult that has like 8.6 million members, so you can imagine how many refugees there are, and if I made myself available to all of them, I just wouldn't be able to get anything done. But we do have a team at JW Survey, so if you go on jwsurvey.org and you go to the contact page, if you need to reach us, there is a support address, and we try to reply to as many of the emails that we get as possible. Aaron's kindly mentioned my John Cedars channel. I have the Random Cedars channel as well. My two books are The Reluctant Apostate, How to Leaving Jehovah's Witnesses Comes at a Price, and I also have How to Escape from Jehovah's Witnesses. I think that's mostly it. I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all those usual things. And it's probably mostly boring, but if you can tolerate me, then
boring. I mean,
don't mind my occasional political rants, then
I think you do extremely important work, and you know, I think obviously you get into the nuts and bolts of things where some people don't, but that's important. I mean, you got to get into the nuts and bolts. So
which brings us full circle to where you don't want to get hit with a Nerf gun, doesn't it? Yeah, in your nuts and bolts.
Keep away. Wear a cup. Lloyd, thank you so much. You really made my day. Actually, you probably made my month, tell you the truth, coming on the show and talking. And I hope that you get to do a Star Trek episode on Random Cedar soon, and you can talk about some get people a little some ideas. I know you want to do other things. It's not all sci-fi. But
I probably will have to do a First Contact film, and you've beaten me to the punch here, but I will probably need to explain why it's my favorite film. And then maybe at some point I can get round to doing something on Shatner. Bless it. Bless his cotton sock.
I met him at a comic convention once. I mean, it was very brief, but he seemed like a nice guy. But, you know.
He's still around. It's just, I sense that when he dies, it won't be as big a deal as when Nimoy died. I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be a sad day. For Trek fans, but
it will.
Yeah, he's a unique, and we'll never get another.
I think the man and the legend are two different things.
Oh, yeah. Well, just like Zeppelin Cochrane.
Indeed.
Guys, if you get a chance, you want to contact us at Synthaholics, you can contact us at Synthaholic Duo on Twitter. You can go to our Facebook, /groups/ Synthaholics. We have lots of discussions there and, you know, funny memes and all sorts of things that people post all the time. So join there. Also, if we have a Patreon, if you feel like this is a podcast you'd like to support, please go to our Patreon, Synthaholics. You can support us there. Another way, just totally for free, that you could help support the show is share the show. Let your friends know. Tweet it or share it on social media. That's greatly appreciated. Lloyd Evans, you are amazing for coming on the show. Thank you so much. And maybe we'll get you on another time to talk either Picard or next season of Discovery some point.
I'd totally be up for it. Thank you. Thanks for having me. And again, live long and prosper. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.